to our investors as well as our head business manager, we roughly have $4 million for 5 years for a total of $20 million to potentially go to referendum and not raise taxes. Okay, I'm going to make that very clear, not raise taxes. Okay? The current situation of the district is that we are at a $1.2 million deficit just to keep operations running. If you add a contingency fund in for Steven, we would be at roughly a $1.6 million deficit. So that would be always improved maintenance. Okay? So $4 million is what we could potentially go to. $1.6 is what we are doing for our deficit at this point. So if we would choose to go to referendum, we would be putting out a survey to the public to say, what would the public support or not support? Hopefully, they would support operations, okay? But do we want to do a track? Do we want to do a baseball field? Do we want to do an orchard? I got an email yesterday that we need a pollinator garden. I got an email 2 weeks ago, we need to have land for a community garden. I have people saying that we need to build pickleball courts, okay? So there's a whole bunch of different ideas that I'm just getting bombarded with emails, okay? We have a committee that needs to sort all this out. So if we do any of that, it costs money, okay? If we want to build pickleball courts, that's going to be well over $4 million, as we'll see when we get to that presentation, okay? So that's kind of setting the stage for if we do a community survey, what would we support, this committee kind of has to narrow that down. And then when it comes to the finance side, I think we need to present, this is the wishes of the land use committee, can we afford it, and what do we actually put out to vote if we choose to go to referendum? Okay, so that's kind of what I wanted to lay the stage. If we go to referendum, ideally it would be April of this year or the April of the next year. If we are going to go to April of this year, it's been stated many times, we got to start making some decisions. Okay, we got to know what we're going to go to referendum, and we need to tell the public exactly what we need the money for. Are we buying trees for an orchard or aren't we? Okay, are we making more walking trails for the community? Are we not? Okay, are we repairing the softball diamond or not? Okay, those are the types of decisions we need to start making and narrow the scope, because I don't want to put a survey out for beehives and some people really want beehives and others don't. We got to narrow that down and not put that on like a survey question. So I'm just kind of setting the stage. So tonight we are going to show you the Taj Mahal, correct? Yes. Okay, and we're going to show you possibly revenues, and we're going to show you a bunch of different ideas that's been talked about since I've been superintendent for the last 4 years. Okay, so I think that's everything. All right.
Dave, did you want to say anything to kick off? Or?
For Dave?
Yeah, absolutely.
By the way, I'm Ben Huber. This is Drew Lunt. He's the president of the board. This is Troy. Troy Kuhn is the superintendent. Dave, you are the head of
utilities
in the city of Clintonville and
utility
and all that kind of stuff.
All that stuff.
And they have a solar project that they would like to introduce us
for consideration.
Yes. So the reason this is brought up, this board a few years back voted on a solar project that unfortunately, I denied it. The utilities, as manager, I denied it, which turns out probably saved the school a couple $1 million.
In the
future. And I'm glad I did that. Sorry to the board that I hope they felt I did the wrong thing, but I think it was a good thing for not only the school and our community. So this is one way. I want to change the mind of the board that the utilities is 100% not against solar. We're not. I want to do it the right way. So this is one of the right ways we can actually put solar we can actually put education to the kids where some of the lines is already in. But I would need land, which you already dedicated land back then for a solar project. I'm more or less saying that Great Lakes Utility, they would pay for the solar project. School wouldn't be on the hook for a dime. Not a dime. The only thing the school would get is an educational piece, and they would also be getting revenue in for the land that we would need. 24, 25 acres of the school land is what we would do with the 5 and 8 system. That's what we would need. I'm very open to the cost. I can tell you right now, my figure right now is I would give per acre $500 per acre per year with the incentives to go up like an escalator, 2% a year or whatever we decide as the board and myself. I'd be willing to do that. Our developer is Eric from One Energy. He would be doing the developing and stuff. And again, this is not going to cost the school a dime, but you will get the educational piece of having a solar system here for the education that we were going to do a few years back. So I can let Eric go right into the presentation of showing how this works and stuff, just for your knowledge. But I do want to stress there is an educational piece for clean energy for our students. And believe it or not, I live in the city of Clintonville, and I have 9 grandkids. I know. I don't look at them. But I have 9 grandkids that's in this school district. So I'm going to be here for a while. I live in Clintonville. I want to see it. We do have alternatives, I'll be honest with you. I do have alternatives like the airport and stuff. But honestly, I would like to show you, the board, and the community, that I am not against solar being at this high school. That's my main reason for picking a high school in the first place.
Before you go on, I want to publicly thank Dave, because the school board, when we started the referendum process, had solar presenters come to us and give us plans. What they said in open session and verbally was not represented in the paperwork. The paperwork actually had language that really could have hurt the district. And Dave and his good friend in the Shawnee Utilities went through that contract with a fine-tooth comb and showed us where we had dropped the ball. And he saved this district millions of dollars because he did due diligence. So thank you, Dave.
Honestly, that's my job. But I would do it again in a heartbeat. If I see something wrong with a contract, I would deny it. And I did deny this. And there was people that wanted me to lose my job over it. But in the long run, people have seen why I did what I did.
Well, thanks for the introduction. Thanks for having us here. My name is Eric Udelhoffen. This is my colleague Stanley in the back. And we're from One Energy Renewables. We're Wisconsin-based. We got an office in Madison and about 50 folks that work on developing, engineering, and building solar projects that are all selling power to the utilities. So we don't do projects that are behind the meter. We just do the larger scale projects that are kind of partnered with utilities. So the closest one we have to here is in Bondwell. That's a project with E Energies. We're building another one in south Oshkosh this year for WPS. And those are kind of in the same size range. The 30 to 40 acre range is kind of our sweet spot, down to 15 acres kind of on the lower end. We started our Madison office back in 2015. And we're up to 55 projects in Wisconsin, Minnesota, and Iowa, and then a couple in the northern part of Illinois. And we work quite a bit with either municipal utilities or public power utilities. So a lot of projects with cooperatives in the western part of the state as well. And Great Lakes Utilities, the reason we're here today, Great Lakes Utilities put out a request for proposals for distributed projects that, you know, had the ability to provide power cost effectively to Great Lakes Utilities and its members. So we were selected through that process and are working now towards finding suitable locations in as many of the members' territories as we can. So we're looking in Marshfield, Wisconsin Rapids, Shawano, some other member utility territories. And the goal is to find locations that are have the characteristics to support a cost-effective project, and then have some sort of tie-in with the landowner, whether it's owned by the city or owned by a public entity or, in this case, the school district. So that's the stage we're at. The ultimate goal is that we would build the projects all in one mobilization with one contractor, all using the same type of equipment in 2027. So we've got some time yet, but that's going to heat up pretty quick once you factor in permitting and design work and all the approvals that we need. The format of the deal would be a power purchase agreement where we would own and operate the project, all of those 7 to 9 projects, and then we'd sell the power to Great Lakes Utilities. So if it's not generating, we're not making money, and obviously, you know, Great Lakes Utilities doesn't have, is not spending money, so it's only a good deal for us if it's highly productive, well-maintained, and operating for the full duration of the lifespan. So we typically design these to have a 40-year life, so we're choosing type of thickness of steel, galvanization, all those things. We're designing it around a 40-year useful life. The term of the power purchase agreement is 30 years, and that coincides with the warranty period on the solar panels. But everything else we designed to last a minimum of 4 years. So from the school board standpoint, that's what we would ask for in terms of a length of the lease agreement if you were interested in moving forward. And we're kind of in the other communities from the other locations, we're looking for the same thing. The maintenance of the project and the lease premises, so whether it's vegetation maintenance or any kind of maintenance related to the project, would all be our responsibility. And then we'd also be responsible to remove all the facilities at the end of the project life, or if it stops operating for 6 months. So whether it's the full term or at any point if it becomes inoperable for a reason, we're obligated to remove the facilities.
When you say remove, would you also say remove and restore?
Yeah, the lease agreement does say remove and restore. If it's a tilled field, then we say restore to a condition that's farmable by conventional farm equipment. But
one thing to add too, with the contract which we discussed, I haven't discussed it with Barrett, so he's probably going through a computer at me right now. But say the school district 25 years from now has a project they want to put on that land and solar. We could put in the contract. It could be removed earlier or whatever, but that would be on the school's expense after signing the contract. It could be done, but I just want to put it out there that would be on the school's. Say they got something better, that the revenue source is way better than what we're offering. It could be done, but the removal of the equipment within that contract would be at the expense of the school. Does that make sense?
Okay, well, I'll talk a little more about that, because when we put it, basically with the investment is 95% up front, so we got to keep it running there in the back. But if we can talk about it, there's maybe a couple different ways to have outs at different points. So another question you might be asking, why are we looking at this location? They've alluded to it before. There's good characteristics electrically. That's probably the key thing. If you're not close to the right kind of electrical infrastructure, you kind of can't make a project happen. It's got to be kind of Goldilocks in terms of able to tie in, able to handle that power, but yet you don't need to do major upgrades to it to facilitate that connection. So that's, you know, the connection here is favorable from that standpoint. Site suitability is another factor. So we're, you know, not very creative, like to have rectangular flat sites. That's what the engineers always would prefer. There is some topography here, but it's within the range that's acceptable and that we can design around. And then an interested landowner. So, you know, a lot of times we're working with other Blue members, municipality owned land, or a private landowner with a lot of our projects, but in this case, it'd be the school district. And I'll just go through this stuff pretty quick, so definitely stop me if you have any questions. But generally speaking, we're doing all single access tracking panels that run north south. The pilings are I-beams that are driven into the ground about 10 to 12 feet. So when you're looking at the project from above, about 30% of its panels, the remaining 70% is just basically space between the panels so they don't shade each other. But the vegetation, they're up off the ground about 3 feet at the lowest edge, 6 feet at that midpoint. So none of the vegetation is shaded all the time. The shading moves throughout the day, so you're able to get the entirety of the site vegetated pretty thick. And when we do a pasture for sheep grazing, that sort of thing, the vegetation underneath is actually tends to be higher forage quality. So it ends up being that there's the only area that's not vegetated, just the access drive. It's a very small percentage of the overall site.
So is there any, when you're placing those poles, you're just digging a hole, putting it in, and shutting it back in concrete?
Yeah. So they're installed using a pile driver.
Okay.
And actually, at this point, we started using these hydraulic drivers as a bigger machine, but they don't even really, it's not pounding.
Yeah.
It pushes it down. And so the soil disturbance is pretty minimal, but there's definitely no concrete with them, which is pretty nice. So the depth they have to go to depends on the frost load and the soil parameters, so we got to do some testing for that. But, even our transformers are skid mounted now, so they're pre-manufactured on top of a skid, and those are mounted on pilings as well. So we don't have there might be one concrete pad for the utility equipment, but for our equipment, we don't have concrete. The inverters basically take all that DC power from the panels and convert it to alternating current. And those are located at a central point next to the transformers. And they basically are also installed on those pilings. They collect up that DC, convert it to alternating current, then feed it into the transformer. The transformer, this is one of the skid-mounted pre-built transformers that we use now. And it takes that that 600 volt output from the inverters and steps it up to the grid voltage. And then we always use this agricultural style of perimeter fence that looks like a deer fence around an orchard. We asked our engineers to just sketch out what a layout would look like. It's a pretty high level design, but just to give you a sense of what it would potentially look like on that space. Dave mentioned a 5 megawatt system, so it would produce roughly 11 million kilowatt hours per year. It's about enough for 1,300 Wisconsin households, and that's about 21 acres within the fence. There's a couple areas that this fence we can tighten in. It's kind of cutting the corners in some spaces. So on the next iteration, we tighten that in and we tighten the panels so there'd be more space to walk around the perimeter and do more on the perimeter. But we usually lease a little more of the acreage than exactly what's fenced because we want to make sure that's maintained as a growth of trees and that sort of thing. And it's not like you can farm those kind of strange areas. So, and then the connection to that existing Clintonville utilities three-phase line would just be on the southwest corner there.
We have a substation actually right off the school property, going right off D. If you go the back way down over to if you go over the back way down to D from here, you'd actually see our substation. So that's another perfect reason is we have this is an easy way to transport that power over our line. Another thing, too, that I don't think we've mentioned yet is, obviously, with our what we call our PPA, we buy our power through Great Lakes Utility. Us and Shawano jointly buys our power for Clintonville and Shawano to lower the prices. By doing that, with putting that on there, some of the money from this or whatever pays for, obviously, pay them back, if that be us, we pay them back. But the best thing about it is by going on to our line, all the power going on our line, all of our residents is going to enjoy that a little bit cheaper power, too, because that's what this power is going to give them. This is going to go to the city of Clinton, to residents and everybody else, minus a little bit, obviously, to pay for the project. But even all of our residents in Clintonville, including all the schools, it's going to help their electric bill, because he's right, it's a PPA, it's a purchase power agreement, like we have been doing for years from Dairyland Power and everybody. That Blue buys the power for Clintonville, and then we pay it. It boils down. That's why I'm a member on Blue, because Blue is our purchase power agency, if that makes sense.
Yeah, this is just kind of built on that same point. The local production, having the production close to the load, does provide some resiliency and just stabilizes the grid and prevents outages or other issues on the high voltage system. We do really focus a lot on job training. So all of our, we're building 15 projects in Wisconsin this year. They're all with union contractors who all have apprenticeship programs. And so we're always trying to make sure people in the areas that we're working, especially if we can get partnerships with schools, understand that solar installer is one of the fastest growing jobs, but it's also getting into that those trades is something that you can do, and it's a transferable skill to other, you know, a lot of the folks on these jobs are equipment operators, electricians, and so we do have a lot of kind of workforce development partnerships. And then we always try to make sure we're available and able to give tours of the projects that we do whenever we possibly can. So we have done a lot of projects within our array areas with whether it's farm groups, schools, but then we've also, we try with every one of our projects to do a demonstration project with a local school. So these are just a couple of the schools, like Mauston School District, and then this one's in Merrill. Got a couple others in the Black River Falls area. And we basically just donate panels for a school to install to have an educational opportunity with that and see what it produces and understand the weather impacts on that. I think in this case, we'd be definitely open to do something similar to that, but with having a whole project here, we'd also be very interested in having like a kiosk if you wanted to have a readout of what the production was doing of the whole project at any given time. We can we make those available to the utilities, but we can also make that available with a login to the school. So you have a kiosk in the hallways to be able to be able to see what's producing and kind of compare that against what the school is using and that sort of thing. So that's one of the ways we like to try to make this a little more real for folks and help people understand what it goes towards. But I guess another thing we really pay a lot of attention to is the site stewardship of the land within the project. So that, as I was mentioning earlier, of that 21 acres in the fence, there's really only like about a half acre that's part of the access drive. Everything else is vegetation. And so that's a lot of opportunity to try to do different creative things and make sure that land is still productive and contributing to the landscape that is within. A lot of our projects, about 60% of them end up being pollinator habitat, where we see like a pollinator type mix, a low growing prairie that's kind of similar to a CRP type mix. That does take some time to get established and takes a lot of effort for the first few years, but then becomes a real asset and it's quite nice. This is like the third year of a project in Winona, Minnesota that we built. And it becomes something that people want to come see and witness, and they do also provide a lot of benefits to the surrounding cropland if it's growing things that direct depend on pollinators. The other 40% of projects we do, we partner with a local grazer and try to bring in grazing. If there's anyone that's interested in grazing sheep, that is a great complement to what we do, because we're typically paying someone to basically maintain the pollinator habitat, and that involves a lot of mowing, sometimes spot treatments of herbicides, there's problematic invasives, that sort of thing. So if we can find someone that wants to graze, we can pay them what we would have paid to maintain that in other ways for them to have access to this forage. So that's something that we'd love to find. We partner with 4-H groups and other communities to graze within the arrays. So that could be, and we could, within 21 acres, that's a lot of space, so we could break it into groups, you know, one area that we seek to more of a pasture mix, one that's a pollinator mix. And we actually have started experimenting with crop production on a couple of our projects. The biggest challenge with that is usually finding people that actually want to grow vegetables. There's not that many people that are interested in or need the land for this, but we've got a project in Mondovi where the folks already grow vegetables that we're leasing the land from, and they're gonna trial 4 of the rows for growing pumpkins this year, or this next year. This project is, we're happen to be next to a vegetable farm, and they're growing herbs within the project area. So we're open to trying to explore different ways we could partner with the FFA or other folks within the district to try to figure out ways that we can make use of this space within solar projects and put it to a good agricultural use that also has other kind of community benefits. So that was probably more than you bargained for. Sorry for taking up so much time, but I appreciate everyone's willing to bear with me here.
Have you partnered with any other school districts?
Not to lease land, no.
Okay, so we would be the first?
Yeah, we lease land from quite a few municipalities, and airports, and we've done projects where school districts are purchasing portions of the output of our projects, but we've never done one on school district property.
And then to clarify, you lease the land, but then in this case, you're leasing the land? How can you clarify that?
We would actually be leasing the land from the school district, the utilities would be. If we would lease the land, we would we pay for the infrastructure, obviously, because we would be hooking it to our system. That's up to us. We don't let anybody just hook it up. They would do, like he showed, they would do like the inverters and everything like that. And then that's where we would come in. If we had to extend our line and stuff, that's where we do. That'd be up to the utilities.
Do the solar panels follow the topography of the land, or do you guys come in and do some bulldozing to make flatter areas like on that? It is hilly back there, so I was curious. Do you guys cut some of the land?
Yeah, that's a great question. The bigger, much bigger projects that might see, you know, going up around the state, they're more likely to do that kind of earthwork. With the smaller projects, we can accommodate the grade fluctuations. And the main reason why is we've got to have like a 400-foot run for that tube that the panels mount to that's level. Mm-hmm. Within that, you know, the ground's undulating. And if we design for like the worst case, where, you know, the most that's sticking above ground, it means we gotta stick more into the ground so there's more steel. Mm-hmm. But we can do that on these smaller projects. It makes sense to pay for that more steel, mm-hmm. and avoid all the grading, because then as soon as you do the grading, you've got a host of other issues. Mm-hmm. And plus, we just really don't like to, we try to minimize grading as much as possible, because you run into, it's harder to restore at the end of the project life. I just don't like it. I'm a farmer. Yeah.
Anybody else have any questions?
Yeah. If you guys would end up coming here, would you guys help the FFA then find a new place to have your crops? because you're going to be pushing that to fail from using that for school use.
And I'm not here to push anybody out.
Well, I know that, but I'm just saying, would you guys do?
If we had other places, and that's, I've never had that question asked. I guess if I have a place, I would be willing to do it, but I guess I don't know how to answer that question.
Well, the big thing is they do use that fuel for, they're going to be using that fuel this next year for teaching classes, digging pits.
And this
soil testing.
I'm wondering if they still could, because like with farming and everything else, it's possible they still could.
They still probably could, but I mean, if you start digging around some of these pylons, that's going to loosen up the structure of the...
My brain's not going towards that. My brain is going to numbers, because I was in the thick of the last agreement. And I want to say it was a slightly smaller system, and we were going to have to pay roughly $50,000 a year to eventually own the system at the end. Okay? But our utility bill specifically for the middle school was right around $20,000 to $25,000. So we were going to lose $15,000 a year over 30 years. That's why it wasn't good. Just like you had said, and then after the 30 years are up, all the warranties are gone, and then the company's like, oh, here you go, Clinton Middle School District, here's your solar fields.
Yeah.
Okay, when all the warranties expired. But my brain is still going to, you know, let's just pretend with your numbers, you're giving us $12,500 per year. That's only $375,000 over 30 years, and we can't touch that land according to the agreement. It's yours. You know, I'm just thinking an $18 million annual year budget, $12,000 is minuscule. You would really, at least to sell me, you're going to have to sell me on education, aesthetics, all this other stuff. The way I'm viewing it is that the community would benefit by the utility bills going down, not the school benefit by helping the budget. That's the way I'm viewing it. I don't think anybody else has seen it that way.
Like, free utilities would have been a great sell.
I'm sorry, what?
Free utilities would have been a great sell.
Sure would. we would need to pretty well the whole city land to put solar everywhere. I would agree. It's just that I didn't know what you were using the land for. Sorry. I didn't know what you were using the land for. Now, to me, if you're not gaining a lot of profit off of it, anything that you're not gaining right now is going to help. So that's what I'm saying by offsetting that. I mean, the school would benefit from the electric bills too, just like the customer. You're a customer of the Clintonville Utilities, so you would be benefiting. Everybody would. Maybe not free.
If I could just add, I did the calculation with the 2% escalator, and it's like $507,000 over the 30 years.
Yeah, because we do have an escalator here. It might be the first year, saying $500 an acre, but remember, you got an escalator per year. That's going to drive that cost up each year. You're going to, inflation and stuff like that, you're going to get more every year we have that on the land. You're going to get actually more than that $500 per acre.
Is there a reason why we can't do it like on top of the buildings or over parking lot?
Yeah, I mean, our goal, all of our projects, we're trying to produce power as a commodity and make it as cost effectively as we can for the utility. None of the utilities would work with us if we weren't safe, you know, if it didn't make financial sense. And with roof-mounted systems, they produce about 40% less power than a ground-mounted tracking system, and they cost about twice as much, so the economics don't really work out. And then the carport over a parking lot is even a little bit worse than a roof-mounted from the cost standpoint. So I wish we could. I mean, I wish that the financials were done on roof-mounted or parking lot mounted systems, but it's...
Which is a good question.
Yes, it is.
We've had industries come to me about put the solar on their buildings and financially through those corporations actually in town by putting them on the roof and stuff. For them to own it, the payback was like 10 years if it produced what they said it would produce. And every time we go to them and give them the numbers, it was more, and I've done this like 3 times to different industries, and always the answer is, after doing all the investigation stuff, it's no, we don't want it. And I'm like, okay. So, I mean, the rooftops ain't, it ain't the best idea, but as well as probably everybody knows here, we just built a new building for the utilities that we well needed, because our other building was over 100 years old. And the future thought of that is to put solar on that roof. We build it for the withstand or hold the solar panels on that building. But of course, it costs a lot of money to build the building and stuff. But our future plans is hopefully to put solar on that building too. And anything goes on the line, since we own the system as a utility, anything goes on the line would obviously lower the cost too. I mean, we would use the utility to lower the bills and stuff, but we would be putting stuff back on the line where the customers would enjoy it too.
Any other questions?
I have a couple questions. I attended several land use meetings with the board back when we were trying to determine what was going to happen with that field for the egg fields that are here. If I remember right, and I didn't go to the last one, there was a memorandum of understanding that was put together for the FFA alumni and the egg department talking about moderate length use of the egg fields, and I know some planning has gone in. We've got a crop planted this year. Now you're coming and saying that that agreement is going to be null and void because this possibly could be put in place.
The Clintonville Utilities asked whether the school would be interested, and frankly, they received a little cold shoulder. But they said, could we come and present?
We just want you to have all the facts. Yeah.
So it will still be up to this committee and then eventually the board. Yes. But this is to give the information so everyone is available. Okay. So there's no plans. There's no plans. This is
exploratory.
Yeah.
I didn't want to keep the school district out of the loop because they had land. So that's why we're here. We're here to present what could happen. Not saying it's going to happen. That's up to you guys. We just want to present to you something that, okay, so now we could go green with the school and have something go green for our students and stuff. That's what we're here for. I mean, I'm not saying it's going to go or whatever. It's going to go somewhere. We know that. We do have land elsewhere, but my thing was, because of what happened in the past, personally, was to give the opportunity back to the school that if you really wanted a solar program like you did in the past, this is your opportunity to take advantage of it. That's the only reason I'm here, is because of what happened in the past that I almost lost my job over it. And if I lost my job, that's fine, but I did not want the school paying millions of dollars to do a bad choice. And they were ready to. Honestly, they were ready to. If I wouldn't have denied it, they might have done it. I'm not saying that. I'm here to say, if you really want a solar program and not cost the school district a dime, this is the way to do it. We're paying for it, not the school. That's all I'm here for.
Well, thank you, gentlemen. I appreciate it.
Well, I have a couple questions.
Sure.
Am I allowed to speak?
Yeah. Absolutely, absolutely.
For me or him?
I don't know, just general questions. I've got a little bit of experience, which makes me dangerous. So I've been contacted to lease property in a similar fashion to out-of-state, I'm going to call them aggregators. So these are groups of people who are trying to aggregate chunks of property. So it's a couple hundred acres, and they want to put this in a solar field.
Yep.
And we had lawyers look at the contracts. The money was higher than what you're offering here, but they were looking at the contracts. And at the end of the day, it came down to the aggregators was who the contract was going to be. So I don't know if Great Lakes Utility, you're not public, are you? Public?
Great Lakes Utility is not public. They are a joint action agency.
And with how many members? And basically, it's like Clintonville, Shawano, Wisconsin Rapids.
There's about 12 people. Yeah. So all it is that's who they do our contracts for purchasing power first.
Right. So, and then One Energy certainly is not public, right?
No.
Okay. So the dealings that I had was with companies that were aggregating for either companies like One Energy or potentially Great Lakes Utilities. But when we got down to the bottom of it, the contract was with someone like One Energy. Where I'm going with this.
I know exactly. I know exactly what you're talking
about. They could say, you know, we can't make this.
Yeah.
And the contract says they're going to clean it up. If they're bankrupt, they've got no obligation. They could just roll up their carpet and walk away. So there's really no guarantees to the Clintonville School District that this would, in fact, or could be cleaned up.
You're 100%.
You know, my suggestion secondarily is if you can just do an AI search. I like to use Grok for a lot of information searches. Companies are, in fact, using parking lots and other dead spaces, roofs. I'm not going to suggest roofs here because I agree that I think it would be too expensive. But you don't have expansive parking lots like Walmart is doing this around the nation.
Mm-hmm.
They're not doing it in Wisconsin because there's not a lot of sun here. So they're doing it in Arizona and other places now. Yeah, now. But also you have to look at what's going to happen in 5 to 10 years. You've got a lot of mini nuclear programs that are coming out. And I don't know where that's going to be in the spectrum of approvals, but I think that solar in 10 years to 15 years, it's maybe going to be viable. I think technology will make solar more viable, but it could also make other green energies, leapfrog. So those are just a couple comments.
You're 100% right, and this is for purchasing power agreement. Boy, I could talk about this all day. Purchasing power agreements. You're right. Coal plants in the United States is going away. We have to replace that. And AI centers and data centers, there's going to be like 50 to 75% more power needed than what we have right now. Our infrastructure is going to have to improve drastically. So where's that power coming from? If you're shutting coal plants down, and that's part of my job on the board is, okay, so if you're closing coal plants now, where's this power coming from? Solar's good. It don't give you capacity unless you do batteries. Batteries ain't the answer, at least right now. You run your phones off batteries and stuff, and that's not the answer right now. There's got to be better technology out there, hopefully coming. Natural gas, I think you're going to see a huge market for natural gas and diesel generations. And matter of fact, you did mention nuclear. That's going to be on the horizon big time because actually there is permits to build nuclear plants. I think, Three Mile Island, from what I understand, might be coming back online. That's a nuclear. Mm-hmm. So the government has got to come up with something. We can't live without power. There has to be something. So my job right now is to look out for energy for the city of Clinton. Where is that power going to come? If they close the coal plants down, we get it from there. Now, as they're closing, where do we get our power for our customers? So that's something that we talk about usually 2 times a month in Great Lakes Utility, which I'm a board member of, with about 12 other cities throughout. Shawano's one of them. My thing is, there's got to be some give and take for power production. We got to find ways to produce the power. Why? I think if we start closing our coal plants and other things, my fear, and this is my fear only, I think we're going to see huge blackouts. California's already seeing it. Solar would give us that during the day. Batteries in the future, maybe if they develop something, we could go with batteries, and that builds capacity. Or if you think about it, during the day you produce quite a bit of electric from solar and stuff, or wind turbines for that matter. During the night, sun's gone down, it's night, you don't produce nothing. That's where batteries come in as capacity for holding. That technology is not there yet. Somebody's going to have to build some technology very soon, because they want to close all these plants that produce our power right now. Well, you got to tell me where the power is coming from, especially when you're talking AI centers. Even in Wisconsin, they're looking at one in Racine right now. Even in Wisconsin, it takes up 50 to 75% more power we don't have. And they tell me that they're going to do this, and Ben knows this from sitting on Badger Board. They're going to do it whether we like it or not. That's what I've heard. AI centers, they're going to build these no matter what. They'll find the power for it. If it ain't by the utilities, they're going to find the power, because this is actually going forward. There's nothing we can do about it. My thing is, where do we find the power? And that does scare me. Honestly, it scares me. The solar, if it's not here, I can almost guarantee it's going to cost a little bit more, because I got to get it through what they call the 34-5 line. That's our big power lines going through the city. I got to get the power to there. Airport is a great opportunity for us. And will it work? Absolutely. But from the airport, knowing where the airport is, I got to get that line all the way back to more or less, if you know where Maisie Street is, I got to bring it to there, or I got to bring it back to East Madison, closer to the substation. That's going to cost me a little bit of money. Can it be done? Sure. Sure it can be done. And that's our plan B. I didn't want to go that route, and I didn't even start talking about it with the city yet, because, again, I wanted to give you the opportunity first. I'm not saying that it's going to happen. I just wanted you to hear what we had to say, and if you're willing to lease land, or whatever, to have the educational piece, that's the only reason we're here. It's up to you guys, not me.
Alright, thank you.
Alright?
Thank you, Tim. Alright, the next presentation would be by Hoffman and Rettler. So you guys are up.
You guys just want to hook up to the TV, or?
Yeah, I got the PDFs I can pull up.
Just to preface the next presentation, I met with Hoffman and Rettler to basically say, what could we do with the land? What opportunities exist? When we initially met, the future of the baseball diamond, the city-owned baseball diamond, was kind of in disarray with the whole grandstands and all of that. So that is why when they present this, it was under the assumption that the Clintonville School District would have to host all of their own events and not partner with the city at all. Okay, so that's why I kind of said, throw the Taj Mahal out there, and then we'll scale her back fast. Right? Yeah.
Good.
So, yeah.
All right. Thank you very much. For those of you who haven't seen this in the past, my name is John Kinnear, president of the Rettler Corporation, for the landscape architect and civil engineering firm, Stevens Point. We do work extensively with K-12 schools across the state of Wisconsin, particularly in athletics. We do quite a bit of work with Hoffman.
Yeah, Matt McGregor, director of project management for Hoffman Plan Design and Construction. I work with the district through your 2020 referendum, pretty much with regard to completion. Also reside in the Clintonville School District, kids go to school here as well. So glad to be here, be back.
Great, so what I'll do is walk through the plan, you know, the scaled up plan. One of the tasks that we took on was to have this be scalable, have it be phaseable, so that we can look at these improvements individually, as individual projects or as a whole. One project doesn't tip the domino, so to speak, to make all of them have to happen. We intentionally move forward with a plan that's scalable. So that was one of the goals and objectives in what you'll see in the layout here. So what we do have aging facilities. Track is in need of new surfacing. The fields themselves, respectively, the varsity soccer and the football field, are in need of repair. We know the soccer field has got drainage issues. We know that the football field is in need of reconditioning.
and that track surface, surface and asphalt are in need of replacement. So that's where we looked first, was that main central area, the track and field and the soccer area, and what that could become. So number one, the track reconstruction, widening the track. What that does is allow us to look at synthetic turf as a surface inside the track. Once we make that geometry a little bit wider, we can accommodate soccer and football within those limits. So we don't need dedicated fields for each sport. We can have both sports participate, or at a minimum, both sports. All field sports, PE, classes can all utilize that day in, day out, instead of having those be dedicated facilities for those couple of sports. Rebuilding track in new asphalt, rubberized polyurethane system. And then west of that, we have plaza improvements to make the spaces a little bit more usable, a little bit more capacity for larger events if you do have those here, and more workable than what's out there now, more accessible. There are some accessibility issues that this project will address. South, where the existing varsity soccer field was, we've got parking. We've got approximately 80 spaces developed here that get access on the west side of the roadway to that facility and then to softball baseball. So we have direct access for ADA into the facility by redeveloping that space. Again, that space is minimally adequate. It's pitched all one way right now for soccer, so having that redeveloped for other uses is optimal. It's a good opportunity. The throws, we've got shot put and discus down the hill. Those would get brought up to the top of the hill and work with track and field in closer proximity. We can rebuild then the long triple jump and pole vault, that number five you see there, or leave them in place for now, but we're going to reserve that space for long triple jump and pole vault. One of the very nice things is the footprint of baseball is very close. So baseball improvements, that could go anywhere as far as backstop dugout improvements over the existing field, full field reconstruction, bullpens, batting cages out there. You could go as far as full synthetic turf. We didn't go that far yet, but we said Taj Mahal. But that could be lit. Those fields could be lit. The opportunity is here. The footprint is here already, which does present some savings for baseball. But again, those agreements will take precedent over what happens here. You do have the space. Softball, if softball were to be redeveloped here, we would move that, share a backstop space with baseball, have a shared restroom, small restroom concession area, and some press box space above that to announce both. That plaza then would be connected to the upper plaza and have the full use of the full concessions restroom area at the top, and then direct access, ADA access all the way down the hill. We've got enough room there to make that ADA all the way down to the plaza and have access to the parking lot. We did look at flip-flopping parking lots, so those details we can get into later. But the big picture, we would then redevelop the softball area in the practice space on the far west side. So again, the grades, the footprint, the ability to redevelop all present themselves here from the track over to baseball, softball, throwing events, getting those in closer proximity to the track and creating a better venue. On the east side of the roadway, we've got the JV field, the existing JV soccer field. That would be a synthetic turf conversion with about 500 to 700 seats press box to allow for other field sports, dual events to happen at the same time, practices to happen all on turf, that we don't need as much grass practice space. We've also got an indoor facility. Matt, I'll let you get into a little more detail on that.
and then an additional 45 parking spaces mirroring the fitness center parking lot to get that to be about 90 parking spaces south of the fitness center. So that's the layout in general. If you want
to, so the multi-purpose facility, what we kind of put together for a program in working with Troy was
which is the one in red.
Yes, correct. Right by number 10. So this one here. So that would be a standalone building to work as. There could be space in there for youth programs, hangout area, foosball tables, a little concessions area. There would also be some storage if the soccer field is down in this location, as well as a basketball court, pickleball court. It paints a number of different lines on the multi-purpose indoor facility for use in that space.
So to be clear, just on the red square right now, even when I was middle school principal, I've had people come to me and say, we need a youth center. We need a place for the middle school and the elementary kids to go after school. Before we approved the wrestling room, I had lots of complaints from the pickleball community that the wrestling was in the rec center. They want their own area. You know, my brain is also going to, I think the community center that the city owns is really nice with their kitchen. Could it be a space you could rent out? You know, my brain is just going a whole bunch of different places, and that's kind of what I threw at you, spitballed at you. Not saying we have to do any of it, but I said, hey, since we're going to talk about it, come up with a design.
Yep.
Yeah.
And so to Troy's point, I'm going to flip through a number of slides here. As we talked early on, the ability to pare this down into smaller projects, because as you mentioned, hey, this is the Taj Mahal, let's do this all.
Yeah.
Well, this is a lot of cash right here. So let's look at how we can make this a little bit more feasible for the district as a whole. So as we look at, we'll call this phase one, is let's look at the athletic fields as they sit here currently, or the stadium project, making it larger, the size goal for a turf football soccer field, a multi-purpose surface, and redo the throwing events here. Throwing events as well as the parking lot. And then the second phase, this would be the first phase, sorry. Second phase would be adding the baseball stadium, repurposing that facility. Third phase, redoing softball and creating the softball field, the current softball field into a practice field. And the last phase was everything over to the east. So the soccer field that was discussed here, this was provided as an add option if we don't want to go with synthetic turf on the current stadium or within the confines of the current stadium. That's what that option was for in that area.
Can you go back to phase one, please?
Right.
Just an update conversation that you and I had.
Yep.
If we do not touch this area, this could still be the varsity soccer field. Okay.
So two things on that, Troy.
Yes.
So that could be the varsity soccer field, it could be the JV soccer field.
Correct.
If we do, and we had looked at a concept that this stays as a grass field, practice, soccer, what have you, we still reconstruct the track, make it wider, put turf inside the track, synthetic turf, so that you still have the stadium. And capacity, and we can do that as it's a standalone, we'll call it one prime or sub one project, and leave the throwing events where they are down the hill, leave the long jump, triple jump where they are currently. And that's, again, as we looked at this, there's many ways you could skin this cat. Anything more on that one, Troy?
No, I'm assuming you're going to get into minimum, we have to replace the track for the next 5 years, right? I'm guessing you're going to throw some numbers at us and then say, well, while you're doing the track, you could consider X, Y, and Z. I'm guessing you're going to get there.
Yep. So that was all of those. And so this is the same cost summary that we put together, really to kind of walk through those phases. So that phase one, updated athletic complex, the track and field defense, the synthetic turf inside the track, parking and drives, everything we were showing in that phase one, we're looking at about $5.4 million for that score. The added baseball field with a natural turf would be 1.8. The softball field, also with natural turf, and updated that practice facility, 1.5. The multi-purpose facility at about 2.8, with including the additional parking that is associated with that as well. So that Taj Mahal option, we're looking just shy of $12 million for everything. That's leaving the south soccer field, or the, I'd say the southeast soccer field, as is. And then we had an option to update that with natural turf for an additional 1.9.
Could you give us a breakdown of the number one? So let's say, what is the expected cost in 3 days, 7 years, for the replacement of the track alone? I mean, assuming we do nothing else, or you might be a better.
Yeah, I'll throw that one on you.
So if we, just so I understand the question, if we reconstruct this, what's the 7 year?
I'm saying if we do the so this would be a sub one.
You're gonna grind down the track. Yep. You're gonna repave it and yep. Put the rubber on top. What does that cost?
We're talking $550 to get that project.
So $500,000 plus.
$500,000 plus would be a good placeholder for that.
Everything
project.
Else stays the same.
Right.
So with that, would we, if we want to go to turf, would we have to make the decision on which we're going to pitch that track and those decisions then?
Then we're talking the base project here, because to tip a track, we need to regrade it. If we're regrading it, we should make it a little wider.
Yep.
And then the turf would be that much more functional, because it, at the current width, it's a football field alone. Mm-hmm. We can't fit any other width for any other sports in there. Making it wider, putting the turf in makes sense, because then we can use it for
and
soccer.
It would be pitched, correct. The track would be pitched into the turf.
Correct. In, with synthetic turf in there, absolutely, we pitch that in. Whereas right now, your point is it pitches outward. Mm-hmm. That is done. It's done to control costs in the initial phase of construction. There's many tracks like that, and it's usually a budget item, is to keep that crown draining across the track. Not
that's why all the
track.
rubber track material rolls off.
Assuming we were to just do the $500,000 plus project, that all those issues would remain.
Yes, that's correct. Yep, the width would be the same, the pitch would be the same. You'd have a new asphalt track with rubberized surface. Same issues outside of that.
So on the question that Troy brought up earlier, and John's point about $500,000 to resurface or redo the track, above and beyond that to recreate this, you're looking at a little over $3 million to just do what is inside the circle here. And that was the number I shot you a couple weeks ago.
So you're looking at $2.5 million in addition to the track to make that a multi-surface or multi-athletic purpose field. And John, can you just quickly sum up the you and I had an extensive conversation about what is turf today. It's right. Not Camp Randall pouring a bunch of concrete and gluing carpeting to it.
Right.
Okay, that's not today's turf. Can you explain why would Clintonville need turf?
Right, and it's a great question. A lot of smaller districts, a lot of districts that want to consolidate facilities, that's usually the number one reason, is consolidation of facilities. You have limited resources. You have limited staff to take care of those outdoor areas. One thing and a huge benefit is consolidation of use. You're getting soccer, football, all your field sports, practices, all concentrated on that field. Now what that field is a permeable surface. From the ground up, there's a perimeter stone trench with a collector pipe that's going to take all the field water. It's a permeable surface. So all the field water, the track, it's repitched. All that water goes inside, down through the synthetic turf system. It's a permeable system. That subgrade then has this
filter fabric to keep the soils separated from the stone base. There's a clear stone base beneath that of 6 inches, and then 2 inches of fine stone on top of that. What that fine stone allows us to do is laser grade a perfect 0.5% pitch surface to accept an optional shock pad. What a shock pad is about a 0.5-inch, 14-millimeter layer for head-to-ground concussive attenuation. So concussion attenuation, other injuries for head-to-turf injuries, optional, not required. The turf itself is that shock absorption. It's glorified carpet, if you think of it that way. It's a tufted product, polyethylene fiber in a backing material that has been rolled out in 5-year increments, sewn or glued together at the seams. Markings are then placed into that to be permanent. We don't have striping. We don't have any of those costs. It's all permanently striped within the turf system. And then there's the rubber and sand infill. Silica sand is used as a ballast to hold the weight, to hold that carpet down. SBR rubber, the same thing your track is made out of, is used for shock absorption and playability. So that's your cleat grip, your foot release as well. SBR, over the years, this technology has been around for many years now. 2004 is when we started introducing it in Wisconsin, seeing it in the sports industry in Wisconsin. And it's becoming more and more popular, especially at K-12, because of the ability to use it and because of the reliability of the material. We're seeing, you know, very heavy use, 12 years, UW Oshkosh, for example. Whereas in a K-12 setting, we're seeing that 14-year mark. Rice Lake is a good example. DC Everest, a lot of the initial schools that had turf are beginning to replace the turf now. So
the replacement is 14 years, but the technology 14 years ago isn't as good as where it's at today.
Correct.
Is it a 20-year product?
It's not so much the durability. There's good durability there still. The warranties aren't following, which is why I can't say,
I
can see it being a 20-year product, but the products are that much better. The testing, the life cycle testing, the life support testing that's done is showing us many, many more uses than what we were getting 10, 12 years ago on that turf, which they were warranting for 8 years.
And they're already getting, we're not Notre Dame Academy, we're not Fortinville,
right.
We're not, you know, so what school districts our size?
Yeah, so.
And what's the rationale? What have you already done?
So a great example is Wapaka. If you've seen that, played on that, the idea was, and they had an off-site football stadium, Havercorn Field, which the facilities committee was looking at district facilities as a whole. Are we going to rebuild Havercorn Field? Should we do turf there? Only football goes out there. Should we continue to bus our students out there? Consolidation was the key. They had a very overly domed soccer field out there. You'd be really good at kicking a curveball in soccer at the time. Inside their existing track, they thought they needed to redo the track. We did some asphalt pavement analysis. They needed to correct some asphalt and then rubberize their track. And then they had enough width to accommodate soccer and football within that track. I don't have the numbers, Troy, but they did run the calcs on the savings for busing, the savings for insurance, for having an off-site facility, for keeping practices on one field rather than maintaining other fields. They have remote fields to the west of their campus. They open that up for revenue generation. So Wapaka is a great example of similar size. Amherst has that.
Chilton. We just finished Chilton. Toronto is putting one in as part of their referendum process.
Yeah.
It's becoming a lot more popular in some of the smaller rural communities.
Yep. Yep.
It's not just the big wig city school.
I saw two projects in western Wisconsin, a
school districts that were probably half our size, and both of them, I talked to one teacher that worked there, and they're thrilled with it, and I talked with one board member, and they said it made sense for them.
The use purpose of it is phenomenal. I've heard numerous stories from children after we finished it. One of the first classes that was actually on the field was their special needs classes, and they go out there for adaptive PE almost on a weekly basis.
Another question. After the turf lifespan between 14 and 20, whatever number that is, does it cost another $2.5 million to resurface?
No, and that's a great question. It's about $450,000 for removal, disposal, and then replacement of the turf. So a properly engineered system, properly engineered edge condition curb nailer drainage system, we shouldn't have to touch that when we go back. And we've had the opportunity to re-turf some of our earliest projects. UW Oshkosh, I mentioned, was one of those. We took the turf off in a section, did drainage sampling, did materials testing. Everything met spec as if it was placed day one on that material underneath the turf. So that was removal, disposal, and replacement of that turf surface at all. So we just replaced the carpet, if you will.
How about, what's the resale on used turf?
Not recommended. It's a liability. Well,
because there's a thing I'm going with this on.
Yeah.
I don't know if you know anything about Shawnee Fairgrounds. They put a turf showroom in the Coliseum now. You could resell that ultimately to them. Because right now they have a 10-yard line going down the middle of the Coliseum.
Yeah. And you can't. You can't do that.
I mean, there's revenue you could make off of that if you would troll it.
Sure.
And it's an easy place to get rid of it, too.
And I believe that shock pad, John, as far as the repurpose, that shock pad goes through two life cycles?
That lasts two life cycles, so yeah. And then at that point in time, if we look at year 28 or 26 or whatever have you, we'd be looking at $125,000 for shock pad replacement. Yeah. Now, those numbers have stayed kind of insanely level over many years. It's an extremely competitive market. A lot of the producers that have the adequate warranties that can make a good product are kind of fighting tooth and nail to get it to the ground and get the business. So it's remained remarkably steady through recessions, through COVID, through many, many different economic issues. So we're pretty confident when we say that's what it's going to be to replace it. I don't see a lot of changes in the industry. I don't see new products on the horizon either. Like when synthetic turf replaced the old nylon AstroTurf, the rugs like Camp Randall used to have, gluing carpet on concrete. I don't see that next product yet. We're deep into American Sports Builders Association and other industry leaders in that new technology. We don't see it yet out there. Tennis court's a different story, but field surfaces, synthetic turf, the SBR filled surfaces are still the thing out there.
So we as a group are going to be discussing these options and whether any of them seem reasonable going forward. Do you have any more questions for these guys? Because it is a pretty long agenda and I'd like to keep it going.
Caleb, you're the new AD.
There you go.
Anything? Put me on the spot.
Questions, let them. No problem. I'll call myself. I would like to compare with Amherst and Wapaka, so what kind of cost savings they had. Did somebody save some money by making?
Oh, yeah.
Yep. And less workers out there, so.
Yeah.
The maintenance piece of it is huge.
Yeah. We can develop that for you. We can look at your numbers now, what you're doing to maintain the fields, and put a cost benefit analysis together for your district. We can do it so that you can see cost per use. We can provide that with something we did put together for Chilton, very impactful to see those savings. Getting use hours pulled together rather than throwing a number out, we can provide that and show you. And then also, please do reach out to Wapaka, Amherst, Chilton. There's a whole pile of them, and then the
the Highway 53 corridor, Rice Lake, Cumberland, Cameron, Stanley Boyd, we've done all those smaller districts there too. We've done, Rice Lake as well.
Yep.
Yep.
Well, thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you very much.
We will move on to the next item on the agenda, which is the presentation by the teaching staff.
Yep.
I see a couple teachers here in the team. Danielle, Mr. Taylor. I just wanted to give the opportunity, because I know that it's been brought up at the board multiple times that the land needs to be for educational uses. So here's your time. I know you had a whole presentation, which I do have linked, but...
I guess I'll keep mine like short and sweet, but kind of picture that you see in order to kind of keep like, the integrity of the land as it is and for agricultural use, which is kind of my kind of home that I kind of came up with. to support agriculture in the past 6 years, I'd like to see it stay the way that it is because, as we all know, land is disappearing left and right. As you can hear, for XYZ reasons in agriculture, we fight to keep it, and it's just for education and for that's obviously my passion and I believe in it. So that picture there is just like keeping the forest, carrying the pond, utilizing those. We have high involvement in our like wildlife and forestry right now, so having access to those pictures would be beneficial. Yes, we can utilize the school forest that we have now, but having on site with our class members and the way that it is, if it's first, we have a better goal to get out there in those 45 minutes. We are farming the fields right now. We have a 30 spot in the tree, so we're trying to see how that runs so far, so good. We had our seed rep come out and help us put out signs with the kids a couple weeks ago, and he said that was really great. That was really, really good feedback. I'd like to see some type of orchard garden. Obviously, I